do you think the state of agriculture is in the valley, the region, and Colorado as a whole? Where do you think, because you're dealing irrigators, farmers, ranchers, dealing with a lot when it comes to climate, drought, snow droughts. We're reliant on snowpack. Where do you think the industry is, though? Because it's withstanding things, and it seems to be, you know, working through all of these problems.
It is, and there's a couple ways that we're going about it, I think, in agriculture in general. And one of the things that is happening is that, you know, technology improves all the time, efficiencies improve all the time. There's that direction, and then there's also the focus on regenerative agriculture and soil building and soil health and all of those kind of things. And so we're working at it in both ways and using technology to improve, but I think we're, agriculture in general is understanding that the reality is that it's getting drier and it's getting warmer. And it doesn't matter whether you believe in the politics of climate change, the droughts are real and the lack of snow is real. And we have to deal with that as a rancher or a farmer. That's your everyday existence, that's your life. And when you get up and go outside, you have to deal with that every day. And so however you choose to do that, it's part of what the Colorado Department of Agriculture is about, is to help us learn these ways and share that information and get information out as we can, both on the technical side and also on the regenerative and more pastoral.
Welcome to a special edition of the Outdoor Citizen Podcast. I'm producer Owen Woods. This is a recap episode that highlights our in-depth look at snow and snowpack across the San Luis Valley in the state of Colorado. You just heard from George Witten. Next up, you'll hear from Monarch Mountain's Dan Bender, our friend and local avalanche educator Brian Pucciarella, and finally, you'll hear from Russ Schumacher of the Colorado Climate Center. These are just snippets of the conversations we had over the winter. You can listen to each conversation in their entirety on alamosacitizen.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Enjoy.
Tell us a little about the snow at Monarch Mountain right now.
Well, you know, it's an El Nino year. They tend to start a little slow. We did get a couple storms in early December that overproduced based on the forecast that we had. So that was good. That got us open. And we've had pretty good coverage the whole year. Of course, we'd want more.
Are the averages about average for this time of year for you guys at Monarch?
You know, I haven't really looked at the numbers. I could just shoot from the hip. I started skiing Monarch when I was a kid. It's 1971. I started teaching there in 1982 when I was a teenager. I've seen a lot of Christmases that look like this. I know in the old days before we did a lot of our slope grooming in the summers that the rule of thumb was keep your rock skis out till the first, meaning yesterday. So, you know, we're on par with that.
If we consider skiing statewide, the state of skiing in Colorado as a whole, what sorts of things are you seeing? What are you excited about? What are you concerned about?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of things I'm excited about seeing. You know, there's those that think that bail is bad for the industry, and I disagree with that. I think the big boys are good for us. Because if they're having a good year, the word gets out, and that help that just trickles down to the rest of us. It's not important to us to outperform anybody. We want everybody to perform well because that helps us, and it helps the entire state. Other things I'm excited to see are just evolution of equipment and lifts, those types of things. You know, we're looking at doing some expansion ourselves. That's exciting. I don't know. I don't want to get into the debate about climate change or global warming or any of that because those are discussions on their own. I don't know if we've studied weather long enough to have a real opinion on it. But I've seen El Ninos come in and our Christmases look like this before, and I've seen us just get hammered and, you know, this was great for our guests this week because these people are not snow people and it kept them outside skiing and that's why they came here.
So, Brian, tell me, what kind of avalanche year are we having this year compared to years past?
Yeah, another good question. So far, it seems like a pretty typical year. Up until this last weekend, things have been pretty slow. It's been a pretty slow year, so we've kind of seen some big lulls with a couple big storms where the avalanche danger spikes. This last weekend was pretty crazy. A lot of the state got just absolutely hammered with snow. So over the weekend, we saw 200 triggered avalanches, 50 of which were caused by backcountry travelers. So it's a big weekend.
That's a big weekend. What do you find most fascinating or most interesting about avalanches?
I think the big thing is their unpredictability. And, you know, some of my mentors I've had in avalanche education, I've known some just really incredible instructors who, you know, they know as much as you can know about avalanches and still get caught in them, which is pretty scary, right? So there's always going to be a level of unpredictability with avalanches, and that's maybe not the appeal, but certainly something that's intriguing and just drives me and a lot of people to just try to understand it better and work on their decision making in the backcountry. So the unpredictability, I think, is hugely fascinating.
On top of that, does that take us right back to a danger level that's higher than we would expect?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's typically the cycle we're in Colorado, especially midwinter, is during dry spells, it starts healing, the snowpack starts healing a little bit, and the danger rating decreases. And then a big storm comes in, drops a few feet of snow, especially on our snowpack near Wolf Creek. We get these big storms, and the danger spikes. So that's kind of the cycle. It spikes after a storm, and then it's slow to repair itself.
So what fascinates you most about your work? And let's... You can give me two answers if you wish, one concerning your teaching and research and one concerning being the state climatologist.
Yeah, I mean, I think to a large extent, the answer is the same for both in that there's always something new happening, right? Every day is different in the weather. The weather situation, the climate situation every winter or every summer is always a little bit different. So it's never just sort of, even if we're kind of repeating the same, analysis or the same tasks or whatever, there's always some new event to look at or some new situation that came up or some, you know, forecast that didn't quite work out the way that you thought it would. So it's kind of studying all that stuff that's really fascinating and makes every day or every week a little bit new and different. And I think in Colorado, especially, that is the case. We have such fascinating weather. The weather and the climate can vary hugely over short distances, you know, whether that means going from the valley up into the mountains or even just, you know, summer thunderstorms varying from one place to the next. So it's a really fascinating and challenging place to study the weather and the climate and the interactions with the mountains and everything else. Yeah, I think the San Luis Valley is just such a great example of that too, because you can have, for one thing, I think it's still a little bit of a, not as well understood as other parts of the state. We've got all these meteorologists and climatologists here on the Front Range, and everybody loves to study the weather here. But I think, you know, some of what happens there in the valley is so fascinating. And a lot of times it kind of flies, I mean, under the radar, you know, either literally or figuratively, but just, you know, fascinating variations there as well. You know, like most of the planet, Colorado has been warming over the last, you know, decades and longer. So the state's warmed almost 3 degrees Fahrenheit since the late 1800s, and that warming trend has accelerated since the 1980s or so. Precipitation-wise is more complicated. The last, you know, since 2000 or so, as most people are aware, has generally been a very dry period. We've seen several very intense droughts, the crisis on the Colorado River, you know, emerging, all of these things. So that's kind of a piece of it there, and connection to water supply and snow and everything else. And then, you know, so that's kind of where what has happened already. And then looking out into the future for temperature, again, the story is relatively straightforward, you know, assuming that, you know, greenhouse gases continue to be emitted on, you know, the trajectory that they're on, it's the planet's going to continue to warm. That's going to continue to affect us here in Colorado. Precipitation, again, is more complicated. Climate models are a little bit all over the place. Some models show Colorado getting wetter in you know, by mid-century. Some show it getting drier. Others in between. Lots of variations there. But kind of, you know, when it comes to snow and water, even if the precipitation doesn't change, you know, the amount of liquid coming out of the sky doesn't change, the fact that it's warmer is going to put more stress on those water resources. So in the summers, when it's hotter, you know, the air is thirstier for that water. So even if you get the same amount of rain, that water doesn't go as far. El Nino is usually the situation where Southern Colorado does really well in terms of snow and snowpack. And that hasn't been the case up to this point. But that being said, you know, March is when things can also really reflect that El Nino signal. If you think back to like 2019, that was the last time we had El Nino was not nearly as strong in 2019 as it was this year, but that was kind of like okay snowpack through most of the winter. And then March, just everything, you know, turned on, and there was 2 weeks of you know, an onslaught of snowstorms. And that sort of thing still can happen here in the spring. You know, that I think is the sort of thing that, you know, that a warming climate is going to lead to more and more of, you know, because that's like the one thing that's very robust across the climate projections is even, you know, kind of uncertainty about how much precipitation there will be, but they really are all pointing to that, you know, the rivers go to base flow a lot earlier than they would have in the past because of warming in the spring, increased, you know, demand for the water in the summer and so forth.